You're listening to Beals Bite Size, a series of podcasts which explore and dissect some of the key legal and commercial issues in the worlds of liability insurance and construction. Over the course of this series, we will be asking a number of Beal & Co. sector specialists to tackle a range of industry-specific topics, often with the input of an established expert guest.
So today we're joined by Joe Cranall, who is an associate director at Willis Towers Watson in the legal services team. And we are going to debate the current environment for SRA regulated solicitors in terms of their professional indemnity insurance cover. And I guess just to set the scene, for those that may be unfamiliar with this area, solicitors are bound by the SRA to obtain a very austere level of minimum cover for their professional indemnity insurance. It's very wide mandatory cover that they have to buy, high limits of indemnity, very minimal exclusions or limitations, a potentially very long tail of exposure in terms of having automatic runoff provisions in the insurance cover. So all in all, it's a pretty potentially very expensive gilt-edged cover that the SRA requires its membership to have on an annual basis. And I think it's fair to say, Joe, that the market out there at the moment is pretty horrible in terms of premiums going sort of through the roof for this cover. That's fair to say, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a really brutal time at the moment, actually. But it has been for a couple of years. And obviously, it's been exacerbated by the pandemic. But yeah, I think over the last couple of years, sort of capacity has been reducing, appetite shrinking, and to complement that, the rates have been increasing. So which is not great, and it's really, really tough. I think there was a period of time when it was looking fairly sort of buoyant, and solicitors were in a good position. But yeah, the last couple of years have been tough, and I think that's probably. And I kind of envisage it would be the same for October renewal as well.
I've been hearing premiums have been going up sort of 30-40%, and personal guarantees being required of partners to cover off any liabilities, and any firms that have got any particularly bad claims records are almost uninsurable.
Yeah, there's been various sort of rumours going around about all of that, and questions being asked. One thing we do know is there's a lot more questions being asked by the sort of excess layer insurers. And like questionnaires are being sort of needed to be completed, especially around sort of how firms have been dealing with COVID. I think it's just we're just going through really, really turbulent times. And I think, again, as we're coming through the coming out of the pandemic and going into sort of like the sort of next few months, I think it's just going to get a lot harder, and it probably won't sort of see any changes until could be another 12 to 24 months possibly.
So what do you reckon is driving it all? Is it the Lloyd's Review, do you think, that happened, what was that, a couple of years now ago, where PI was sort of singled out, or it felt like it was being singled out as a class that was underperforming?
Yeah.
Is anything else?
I think it's probably a mixture of everything, but I think obviously it wasn't helped by the when we had the financial crisis and the influx of lender claims. And I think it made a lot of insurers sort of look at their books. And I know at the moment, one of the things at the moment is some insurers just really still do not like residential conveyancing, and it's still considered to be a high risk area. So I think there's sort of it's a real mix of drivers, really.
So do you think claims plays a big part in it then? Because I think, you know, conveyancing gets very hard hit, doesn't it? As a, you know, reputationally, it's always been the top of the list in terms of claims. But is that fair? Or do you think there's other issues in play? I mean, regulators are getting a lot more involved now, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's a lot more SRA involvement.
That's right. Well, I think from the SRA's perspective, obviously, it's they're all about sort of protecting the consumer and ensuring the reputation of the profession, you know, and solicitors providing proper standards of service. So obviously, issues around sort of claims will. And professional negligence claims will sort of sometimes sort of feature, and even though it's not an area the SRA look at, they will be interested to sort of see what the number of claims how and what's causing the claims to increase? Is it as a result of solicitors not being able to do their job properly or not doing their jobs properly? Are they, you know, both if there's drafting errors and issues that are causing claims or missing limitation, by doing so, are they, it's questionable whether they are then providing a proper standard of service, and issues about supervision as well. So you can again understand why the SRA is sort of having interested in this area. I think as well is like the profession's moving at such a fast rate. I think as with the advancements of technology and the and issues around sort of being so much, you know, a lot more AI being involved and law firms doing a lot more online, and especially sort of again we've had to move a lot quicker with over the last few months or the last 12 months I'd say, sorry, with COVID. So again, everybody sort of gone from working in office to remote working within like sort of having to sort of hit the ground running as quickly as possible. So what will be interesting is actually to sort of see the claims platform, I think, and understand it fully, probably a full year, probably in 18 months time, to review what happened from, you know, the 23rd of March when everybody went into full government restriction lockdown up until that sort of point, and see whether that has had a significant impact on, and whether it has changed that, whether that's changed the claims landscape, whether it's made it worse or whether it's actually reduced claims because people are working in an environment where possibly they may feel, because they have more time working from home, they may feel less pressured. I don't know, but it'd be interesting to sort of see how that plans, what the stats look like on that going forward.
It's interesting, wasn't it? Because I think you're right about people feeling probably less pressured at home, but equally, as I think you mentioned a minute ago, you've got less supervision, you've got... Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's all sorts of negatives associated with the COVID side of things as well. And particularly those firms who've had hard copy files before and trying to migrate that into the home working environment. You know, there are some definite weaknesses. I mean, that's nothing to say nothing of the sort of cyber side of things where obviously before everybody was hardwired.
Yeah.
Everybody was sort of hardwired into their systems, weren't they? And now we're all having to remote in, which is giving the cyber attacking community a lot more points of weakness.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just wonder, you know, at the moment with rates going up 30-40%, these personal guarantees coming in and everybody sort of saying that it's pretty much carnage out there at the moment, whether it is being driven solely by a fear of these COVID related claims or whether it's, you know, something else. And I wonder whether at some point it has to rest with the minimum terms themselves, because, you know, they are the most gilt-edged PI cover out there, I think, aren't they? I mean, as I said at the beginning, you know, they've got, you know, very high mandatory limits, much higher mandatory limits than I think we see elsewhere. They've got very few exclusions available. The runoff side of things is crazy. And you know, there's not even any need for the premiums to be paid to get the cover, which I know a lot of insurers are up in arms about, and rightly so, in my view, at the moment, and are speaking to the SRA about. And it sort of feels as if the MTC, as it stands at the moment, they sort of pretty much cover everything. You know, we've had Friday afternoon fraud, which wasn't ever intended to be covered, or certainly wasn't part of anyone's risk rating, but insurers have been brought on the hook for that. Aggregation, which I think has long been held as one of those things that the minimum terms was held out as something that it could aggregate more readily perhaps than any other kind of PI, that was found not to be the case in a recent case that the Lord Bishop of Leeds and Dixon Coles and Gill case that was middle of last year, I think. So that, again, is sort of chipping away and chipping away and chipping away. And all of it is sort of leading to the minimum terms just being so gilt-edged, so sort of so much of a guarantee of a law firm's performance that I guess a lot of insurers are running away.
I can definitely see that. And what's interesting is sort of the minimum terms have pretty much been... There's not been much movement, has there, in them since they were sort of brought in when the landscape changed. And normally things are sort of quite often policies are reviewed and updated quite regularly, and that has pretty much sort of stayed stable. And I think as you know, the way businesses and society is, and sort of from a sociological point of view, things do need to, I think it does need reviewing fully to make sure actually is this fit for purpose for all parties involved, you know, whether it be the insurers, the insured, and the consumers that the SRA are trying to protect. And I know obviously they tried to change it back in 2014, and then obviously made the decision 2018-19 to actually sort of not go ahead and reduce the limit, because
they've been passed. Passmore did his best, didn't he, to
and there's arguments about that, but it's still at the end of the day that the way they sort of pushed that was, it was more again for the consumers rather than for all other parties. And I think when you've got something like the minimum terms, it has to be fit for purpose for everybody. And it must be, and it needs to be subject to review, because it's only really when something goes wrong does it actually get read, isn't it? And people actually say, oh, what is it actually that I'm covered for? So, you know, it's all about reading that small print. And
it does feel, I don't know whether you agree with this, but, you know, I would certainly say it feels as if the minimum terms are there to, as you say, protect the consumer, not the firm.
No.
And actually the SRA, you know, controversially perhaps, is there not to protect the law firm. It's purely to protect the consumer.
And I don't know, again, when the Law Society set up the SRA, so they had the regulatory, you know, the sort of disciplinary arm of it, whilst it was there to regulate the profession as a whole, that kind of should really be there to support it too. And guide and advise, and I think at the moment, and especially like we're sort of seeing with the changes to the handbook. So I remember when I was private practice, used to have the 1999 guide, which was this lovely purple tome that you used to like thump on your desk and you'd finger through it to find out what it was. And it was really, there was loads of guide notes and everything in it. And now it's just sort of, I think if you printed it out, it would be so thin. And in whilst it's used to be applicable to the size and nature of the firm, and you apply it as you see, you know, it's your interpretation as you see fit. I think again, lawyers, they like rules and they like guidance and they like to, you know, procedures to kind of give them a bit of comfort that they know they're doing the right thing. And
the second time round we've had this principles based regulation, isn't it? I think the first time was the last book that you know, before the stars that have just come out.
Yeah. The outcomes focused.
It was all outcomes focused. It was all very, very much more minimalist than what had gone before. And the idea was that it was all principles based and outcomes focused and blah, blah, blah. But over time,
it's just become bigger diluted.
And bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we've gone back again to this, like you say, this tiny little book that can't possibly be comprehensive and deliberately isn't comprehensive.
Yeah.
And we'll have to see where that goes. I suspect over the next 10 years, that'll become just
it'll
as big
come
as the
back
previous
again.
Set.
Yeah, exactly. And probably by then, they'll have reviewed the minimum terms and probably what it got dread to think what they'll say and what they'll cover. So,
do you think they will change? Because, you know, like we've been saying, you know, the whole thing with the minimum terms is they're not for the benefit of the firm. They're for the benefit of the consumer. And, you know, we've seen recently the SRA come out with all sorts of guidance for firms that are struggling who anticipate not being able to renew their insurance particularly easily for an orderly wind down. And you would think that kind of guidance isn't the sort of guidance that a regulator that was particularly concerned about the profession would ever issue. But, you know, that's me being, as I say, a bit controversial. But it does feel as if they're much more keen to keep the standard of the cover up than to keep the cost of the cover down.
Yeah,
and as a result, firms are finding it hard to afford it.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I also feel that I don't know whether it's again, this probably sounds like a slightly controversial point, but I don't know if they're trying to drive out the smaller firms because there's this perceived risk, view that they are a bigger risk to the profession, and because again, from when I was dealing with the lender claims, you know, sort of a lot of conveyancing transactions, you know, sole practitioners of two partner firms. Not all of them, they might just be negligent, but not all of them, you know, that was had issues. And it doesn't mean to say that a larger law firm doesn't, but it just feels like it's just driving. And I know a lot of lenders then felt as a result of the financial crisis that they wanted like at least a minimum of four partner firms on their, panels and sort of changing that. And it feels like the way the changes are going with the price increases, that it's trying to squeeze out some of maybe the smaller firms. But I don't know by doing that whether it will reduce the risk. I don't know. It's sort of kind of, I think there is a place to have a sole practitioner and a small, you know, a small partnership or a small firm in a high street. And I don't think everybody wants to go to great big large law firms. So that's,
yeah, I agree. It's just whether or not the Legal Services Board, who I guess are the ultimate arbiter of,
yeah,
of things, whether they will ever allow the minimum terms to accommodate the smaller firms. I mean, it almost feels at the moment as if with so many insurers moving away from solicitors PI and the cost going up so high that so many firms can't afford it, you're almost moving back towards the stage where someone's going to say, let's have a mutual again.
Well, that's interesting because obviously working with the master policy over in Northern Ireland, there's a lot of the firms there, because of just the way the province is, it's there are a lot of still small firms and or sole practitioners, and they are many of them will do the traditional work of that law that people want their lawyers to do, and I think without the master policy, a lot of them probably wouldn't be able to get cover with the way the rates are going. Just, you know, if they were here and regulated under in England or well, sadly, I think they really would struggle, because I know, you know, it's just it's a big part of their overheads. Obviously their premium, I think it used to equate to a third of their overheads. The way the rates are going at the moment, it's probably going to be for much, some, it could be looking at 50%. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's tough. It's really tough. Sometimes it's driving down competition and things like that as well.
Yeah, completely right. Well, I think that is a big issue, isn't it? You would have thought that one of the things the regulator, even a consumer-focused regulator, would want most would be access to competition and to have a competitive marketplace. And actually what they're doing, either consciously or subconsciously, is having the opposite effect, potentially.
Yeah, and I don't know, again, if they've really sort of realised that, I don't know. I think, I just think that, you know, how the country is and how businesses operate, sort of say when this came in 2020, look how much we've advanced. We've gone from, you know, having partners walking around the floors with their dictation machines to digital dictation, and going from having your own office to open plan. And, you know, how much has changed in the last 20 years when you think about it? It's significant, you know, sort of just with the working practices and the thought of everything going into the cloud or files, you know, that I know a lot of organisations are starting to now embrace the sort of the hybrid of an electronic and paper file. But the thought of just having everything on paper, although personally, I do like pieces of paper. I like to have that tangible thing to hang on to. I like my sticky labels and my highlighter pen. It's comforting. But and again, if it goes wrong, then you can't, you're stuck. But that's, so we have seen so much change, and also question whether the 2 million, 3 million limits are actually, again, are they enough? Do they need to be, you know, with the way, especially sort of some, if you're doing a property transaction in London, SRA were looking to reduce it, but actually are these limits that's in place now, actually, are they going to be enough
there's another angle, which is that, you know, people know now that solicitors carry very hefty PI, and where you're dealing with claims, as I often am, and you've got lots of professionals involved up and down the transaction, people gun for the solicitors because they know they've got this fantastic PI cover. So actually, you've almost put a target on your back by having fabulous PI cover that has got very few exceptions. So, you know, it's no surprise that the claims against solicitors are, you know, quite extensive, and you know, claims records are worsening because we are a great target as a profession. And you know, in some ways, the American model, which I think is to have, you know, very low levels of indemnity, despite being a very litigious culture, might be the way to go. I don't know. I mean, exactly. It is an interesting one.
It's really interesting, and I know again from doing the lender claims from a claimant side, I know Bruhis and all that. But again, it's been quite interesting because how you would approach it, and you would probably look to pursue all professionals involved, especially like the valuers and that. And at that time, there was, you know, they either didn't have the levels of indemnity they had, or they'd gone bust during that sort of that crisis. So they were like, oh well, we've got no one to go after, so we'll have to go. And then this listener would be on the hook for everything, even though they, you know, we'd argue, you know, contrib would be argued, but you know, it's kind of easy pickings, isn't it, really? And it doesn't seem quite fair. It's not that palatable. So,
well, certainly when Mr. Passmore came up with all the various proposals back in 14 and 18 about reducing limits, $500,000, I think, was touted at the time.
Yeah.
It didn't get much appeal in the market because I think most people thought that the cost of $500,000 cover was probably not going to be far short of cost of $2 million or $3 million, because most of the claims fall into that bracket anyway. But whether or not it might reduce overall sort of claims incidents just by rendering us slightly less attractive as a target, I don't know. Who knows? I mean, we've got an opportunity. I know that Lloyd's, with their silent cyber review that they've been undertaking, where they've effectively required that every insurer provides positive affirmation or otherwise by a certain date that their policies will cover or not cover silent cyber. As regards the SRA's minimum terms, as things stand, it definitely does cover some cyber issues, as we know, with Friday afternoon frauds and all those kinds of things. But their deadline has been extended. I think it was going to be January, and I think their deadline's been extended to October, to the next renewal, to actually make a positive affirmation as to whether or not silent cyber should be within or outside of the minimum terms. That's going to give them an opportunity, I think, to change the terms, hopefully more extensively, and we'll have to see, I guess, whether they take that opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's right. Isn't there a consultation going on sort of like during March, April as well, so to try and sort of bottom everything out a bit more? Yes. So I suppose it'll be interesting to see sort of the outcome of that. But I think a little bit will go back to, because the firms, again, they need to fully understand what the minimum terms do cover, because if they don't have cyber cover in place, then it's something they need to then consider putting in place. And then actually, if they do put that in place, what does that actually cover? And again, it goes back to reading the small print. I think it's really, really, and also if you do have a cyber policy, again, it's really, really important to actually go through and read it and understand what it is covering. And especially if you're coming up for renewal, then you need to then make sure that it is actually fit for purpose going forward. And again,
and the cost of it, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, you know, exactly. That's another overhead. Yeah,
of the cyber as well.
Yeah.
So I suspect the SRA is in a really awkward place at the moment, where it, on the one hand, it's got to make a decision, but on the other hand, it probably really doesn't want to make a decision, because either way it goes, it's going to be bad. If it says, yep, cyber's covered, then the cost of the PI is going to go through the roof even more.
Yeah.
And if it says it's not covered, then it's going to require all law firms to buy another policy.
And question whether actually with that on top of the premiums, if you add that all together with your PI premiums, are you then, you know, are you... is there any money, is there any saving, you know, or will you end up actually paying more? So it's a really tricky one. I remember when a lot of the cyber stuff first started coming out, when I was working with some of the smaller firms, a lot of them were like, right, we can just go back to the old days, we can have checks, we can not do online banking, because you kind of think like the risks are so minimal. But it's but then again, you've got to sadly move with the times, and I think that's been the big thing, is like the technological advancement's been so fast as well, and people just still trying to get up to speed. Because I think, again, there was always naivety. I remember I've been talking about cyber crikey years and years, and even talking about business continuity back, going right back to like 2010 2011, and it was always kind of like, oh, we'll worry about it if that ever happens, kind of thing. And I think sometimes there is still that, but I know that there has been a shift change into okay, but we'll worry about it when. But again, that's fine, but it's trying to minimize that exposure, because the time and cost it takes to deal with these issues if there's a cyber attack. And also in the environment we're in with social media and everything, you've got reputational damage too. to uphold, because it's so easy to get named and shamed on the websites these days and stuff. And and also if there is an issue and it's then reported at the fines imposed, then all of that's sort of then publicised too, isn't it? So
in summary, happy days. Everyone's a winner at the moment. It seems as if we're getting hit from all sides.
Yeah, I know. It just feels a bit. I think everybody just feels a little bit battered and bruised, don't they? I think.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Well.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Sort of see what the next few months hold. But yeah, I think we've just got to keep wrapping ourselves up in bandage and dabbing our foreheads with a damp cloth. I think just to take a deep breath every now and then, and we'll get there.
Thank you for listening to Be All Bite Size. If you enjoyed this podcast, then please do subscribe or feel free to leave us a review. If you have any specific queries regarding this podcast or others in the series, please contact us at podcasts@beal-law.com. For more general inquiries, please visit our website at beal-law.com or follow us on Twitter or LinkedIn.